seconds. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We've reached the middle of the week, a couple of days away from Super Bowl 55. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to be with you on the afternoon drive as we talk both local and national sports, and that's definitely on tap for today. In fact, tonight, coming up right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, we have Emory High School basketball. The boys team will take on the San Juan Broncos. It's an important week for Emory basketball. Still looking for their first region win. Two massive games tonight against San Juan and then Friday against the Carbon Dinos. So we will talk to Coach Jeff Cincineros. He's scheduled to join us next segment here on the show. Also, we have to talk Major League Baseball. It's been such a slow-moving offseason. And then we had a big trade over the weekend, but the NFL stole its fire as the Rockies moved Nolan Arenado, one of the premier hot corner players in the game, to St. Louis for really discount junk. And I mean that in the most respectful way. Austin Gomber, it's fine. I mean, he was a guy that was kind of middling through the pitching depth of St. Louis last year, going from a reliever to a starter, never really found a role. That was pretty much the piece for Nolan Arenado. Plus, the Rockies gave up $50 million. No, they didn't receive $50 million. They gave St. Louis $51 million to take one of the premier third basemen in the game. And a little later on in the show, we're going to have a segment built around the Colorado Rockies. If you're a Rocky fan, what incentive do you have to continue to support this franchise? I'm not being mean. I'm not trying to pile on a franchise just because they traded away arguably their best player in franchise history for nothing. But what are they offering fans that would persuade them to spend money and go to the ballpark to watch them play? You know, Jeff Breidich, the general manager, he should no longer have a job. And it's not based off of this trade with Nolan Arenado. It's based around the amount of money that he has just completely thrown away since Arenado made his first All-Star game back in 2015. I don't believe there is a more poorly ran franchise out of the three major professional sports right now than the Colorado Rockies. And I really believe that. We talk a lot of NFL and a lot of NBA on this show. We have definitely talked a lot about the New York Knicks and everything that Dolan has done, which is just, yeah, he's a horrible owner, one of the worst in sports. But still, I've never seen a franchise ran this poorly. And it's been that way almost its entire existence. You just go back and look at the trade fleeces after fleece after fleece. And I can't even chalk this up, this Arenado deal. You can't even chalk it up to a cost-saving trade anymore. Like last year, nobody was at the fields. There was no fan revenue. Turnstiles weren't being used. You couldn't go to the game. You couldn't go to the ballpark. And that hurt. I know it did. And long-term-wise, this deal saves you $160 million. But you can't tell me it's an instant cost-saving move because they sent $51 million with Arenado out the door. So we'll break it down. We'll look at the logistics of it. And I'm telling you right now, if you are a Rockies fan, I'm just being real with you when I say I do not believe there is a more poorly ran franchise in the three major professional sports. I think they are it. And you know who's next on the chopping block? Trevor Story and Charlie Blackman. And if you're a casual Rocky fan, when you really dig down into the numbers and you see where they have spent money and they let DJ LeMahieu walk, you just got to shake your head. Hardcore Rocky fans understand this. That's on the show. It's coming up in just a bit. We'll talk about the dysfunction in Colorado. Let's take a look at the national sports scene, and we will begin with college football because today it's that early February signing day, and Alabama, defending national champs, put together just an historical run, and after the first day of the final signing period, the 2021 class, it's number one overall for Alabama, and according to the numbers, it's potentially Nick Saban's best since coming to Bama. That's a scary thought, isn't it? There were some question marks for Alabama going into today. Kamara Wheaton, chance that he was going to flip to Oklahoma, that didn't happen. Alabama continued to move on, signing some more five-star recruits, including Terrion Arnold, one of the top safeties. Now that it's all said and done, Alabama was able. They were able to land 22 of ESPN's top 300 recruits. 3 5-stars, 13 prospects ranked in the top 100. They were absolutely dominant in this recruiting class. Ohio State, number 2, Georgia, 3, LSU, 4, Clemson, 5. The Oregon Ducks jump all the way to number 6. They land 19 four-star recruits. That is the highest Pac-12 squad. Texas A&M at number 7, USC, number 8, Notre Dame, 9, Michigan, 10. Lincoln Riley does grab one 5-star recruit, but he's just on the outside looking in, according to the numbers, as he lands 12 four-star recruits at number 11. We take a look at the NBA and what's happening tonight. Full slate of games. How about the Utah Jazz? Wasn't pretty last night, but the Jazz find a way to get a victory over the Detroit Pistons. The Jazz are going to take tonight off. They'll return to the court tomorrow to take on the Atlanta Hawks. 5 o'clock tip-offs tonight. We get Philly at Charlotte. Indiana travels to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. We get the Mavericks and the Hawks. All of those games in the 5 o'clock hour. Indiana-Milwaukee on ESPN. At 6 o'clock tonight, Clippers at the Cavs. The Heat take on the Wizards. We get the Knicks and the Bulls. Let's get the Rockets and the Thunder, plus the Spurs and the Timberwolves. 7:30 tonight, second game of the doubleheader on ESPN. Phoenix at New Orleans. Nightcap game. It's Boston and Sacramento. Following the results from last night, Kyrie Irving dropping a 39 spot. The Jazz, once again, the number one seed in the Western Conference. Half game better than both the Lakers and the Clippers because Kyrie delivered the Clippers another L with tremendous performance. So the Jazz, number one once again. We're going to break for just a moment. We have more Drive Time Sports coming up when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Coming up tonight, right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM, we have Emory High School basketball. The Spartans will take on the San Juan Broncos. I'm hoping that we have as an entertaining of a contest tonight as we did a couple of weeks ago in Blanding. Unfortunately, in that game, Emory came out on the short end of the scoreboard, falling on a buzzer beater. The Spartans have yet to win a region game so far this year. 0-6 so far this season, but it's a big week. Tonight, San Juan. Friday, Carbon High School. Perhaps the fortunes could change for Emory in just a couple of days. Joining us right now to talk about that, tonight's contest and more, we have head coach Jeff Cinceros over the phone. And, Coach, thank you for the time.
I appreciate it, Jordan. Thank you.
Coach, it's a very big week for this basketball team, and we'll get into the importance of it in just a moment, but we can start by going back over what went down last week, especially in the Friday game against Richfield. And as I had an opportunity to go back and watch a little bit of the video, I mean, the bottom line is I just don't know that that's a very good matchup for very many teams in the state. And so even though there were signs of life in the second half, I mean, you go back and you look at it, it's just a very good Richfield basketball team.
Yeah, as always. I mean, they do things extremely well, especially on the defensive end of the game. And to me, the defensive part of almost any game controls the game. I mean, if you go to a pro football game, you go to any kind of game, defense usually is what controls that game. And they just do a really good job of controlling the game with their defense. And, you know, unfortunately for us, they were making shots Friday night, but, you know, they didn't make Wednesday night, which, you know, was good for a Carbon team that got a win there. You know, I mean, they scored 45 points and got away with a win. And, you know, we scored, you know, whatever, 58 and come out away with a loss. So it's just, it's a two-way street. You need to play defense. You got to have good offense, and they played really good defense against us again, and caused us to have 18 turnovers. And you know, and then we just didn't get enough stops with them on the offensive side. Unfortunately, it was another region loss for us.
Following the loss to Richfield, Coach, again, and we've talked about this, I am always curious, though, the response that you get from the team, especially on a Monday and a Tuesday in practice as you're gearing up for the Wednesday contest. And, I mean, at this point in time, losing, it's been a while since we've recorded a win. I mean, are you still seeing the fight from the kids? Did you see the fight that we saw in the second half against Richfield?
You know, I don't know, Jordan, if we've seen... the effort is great, and I told the kids one thing Monday, that one thing I really appreciate from them is that they're willing to come back to practice and give good effort. I don't see an attitude, you know, that we're developing. You know, it's just, we're still just trying to work on things that we're not doing well, and it's just a mindset, and it's habits that we're trying to break and doing things. You know, getting after in practice is something I think we can always do better at. I think we could have been better at it from day one, you know, to yesterday in practice. It's something that I still don't see that type of effort being, you know, what it needs to be to win some of these games, especially with us struggling right now. I mean, their attitude is awesome, and I can't ask for anything different. I mean, I'm nervous just like anybody else coming back into the gym on a Monday morning after, you know, losing Friday night, that we're going to have, you know, a bunch of attitude issues and whatnot. And that doesn't seem to be the case with this group. And I really appreciate that from them. I've told them that. And I know it's a struggle. I know everybody's frustrated. Again, we've talked about it. I mean, you know, from grandparents to parents, to aunts and uncles that don't even live anywhere around here. I mean, we're not used to winning two basketball games at this level at this high school. But for me, it's about continuing to work hard and just, you know, work on the things that we're not good at and try and get better at them. But we can win games, and it's something that me and my coaching staff have made a commitment that we're going to do every day when it comes to practice. If we only have 25 guys there with that attitude, we need to get after it if we have five guys. And right now, you know, I don't feel like the guys are giving a good attitude. It's just about putting into use what we do in practice and what we're asking them to do and put it into games and make a full game out of something. I still really believe that we can do that, that we're going to, you know, by the end of the year, you know, which is always getting a week closer after we talk, I still believe that we have that ability to do that and be playing a lot better basketball at the end of the season.
Coach, one of the things that I look at now with the remainder of the year, and I know it is trickling down, we only have 2 weeks left in league play, but in my mind, this may be a make-it-or-break-it type week. I mean, we get San Juan on Wednesday tonight. This is a team that fought tooth and nail, had a brilliant second half, come-from-behind effort, lost at a buzzer-beater. Then you get Carbon High School on Friday, and this is at Carbon High, and it will be the closest simulation to a state championship game that these kids can play in. In my mind, if you win two games this week, all of a sudden, your record doesn't look like 0-6. It looks like 6-2. It's not 2-6. It's 6-2. It's 8-2. I mean, I think this week is that important just based on where the season has gone up to this point.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, in my opinion, every week is really that week. But again, having, you know, San Juan at home, a team that we took to the wire and, you know, lost on a buzzer beater at their place after a game that I feel like, you know, we really got taken out of it with some officiating calls and some other things. And then, you know, the Carbon Emory, you know, basketball game is always one of them that really doesn't matter who has the best team, you know, going into that game. It's who can take that momentum and who can build on what they're doing. And, you know, going to Carbon is a close trip for us, and it's, you know, one that I've been looking forward to, obviously, and I hope our kids are looking forward to it, is getting back and playing Carbon, because they're a good basketball team, and we need to be good basketball teams. I mean, we talk about the RPI situation. You know, every night we play somebody in our region, we're playing somebody, you know, that's in the top RPI. And so for us to go get a couple wins against top RPI teams, you know, just does tremendous for us. But, yeah, the mindset, I agree with you. I mean, you go win two games this week. It's a completely different mindset going into next week, playing those teams next week, you know, Grand and South Sevier, coming in, you know, winning two games, so losing two games. But every week for us right now has been one of those. I mean, we've been so close with a couple of teams here the last 2 weeks on getting the wins, and it's just, you know, some little things that we need to change and do different. And again, you know, as coaching staff, we look at things of, you know, how can we be better or how can we be different at the end of a ball game to get those wins. And, you know, we just keep coming back to just execution and playing good defense and not turning the ball over and rebounding. And, you know, it's just the fundamentals. I mean, we can't give up four offensive rebounds to a team in the last minute of a game and expect to win in the close game. We got to make free throws. We can't move 1 for 8 from the line and not make free throws and expect to win. So these are just things that, hey, we can control these things. We're not just playing teams that we can't beat. We're just not getting some of this stuff done. And honestly, it's a positive. I don't know what looks at it as a positive, but you know, if you're just getting blown out by teams because you're just not as good as they are, then you have an issue and a problem. But when you're getting beat because you're just not getting some of the stuff done that you're capable of getting done, but you're working towards being better at those things, and I think that's a positive. And to me, I mean, I still see us working towards things to be better at them. And that's always a positive, and that's why there's a reason that I believe we can go win any game we play. And I don't think anyone's going to want to play a team like us come state tournament time. But, you know, we got to start proving that to ourselves as well. And it does begin in practice and whatnot. But, you know, we're going to do our best again this week, Jordan. Again, San Juan at home, Cardinal on the road, and finish up, you know, next week at South Sevier on Wednesday, and then Grand at home on Friday with senior night. But, you know, tonight's a very important night for us with the game with San Juan. And, you know, I hope we come out and just give our best effort and we can get something accomplished.
Again, Coach Jeff Cincinnatus, our guest right now, the Emory Sport and Boys basketball team. Coach, let's break down the San Juan squad. Last time out, Nathan Grover, big fella, had 15 points. Didn't really do a whole lot of work on the glass. Also, Jensen Grover. I mean, you got two Grover kids here that are very, very capable of doing work on the glass and doing work inside the paint. And I remember following that game, you and I had a conversation about Brett Rasmussen. It was the best game that he has played.
Yeah, Brett's going to need to be best for us then tonight, isn't he? Anytime they play a team with size and physicality, which is what San Juan brings to the table, then we need to be able to counteract that. And, you know, right now, you know, we have some guys that work extremely hard that are undersized, and they do the best they can with kids like that. But, you know, ultimately we need Brett, who matches that size, and we need him to match that physicality, even though he's just a sophomore. I've seen Brett do it, and, you know, we're putting a lot on his shoulders when we ask him to do that for us. But, you know, I mean, I think Brett's capable of it, and it's time for him to start taking that role for us and working towards, you know, the next couple of years of his career. Emory, you know, tonight's another big step. I mean, these kids are extremely physical and size-wise. We need to keep them off the glass, but we need to attack them offensively and get them in some foul trouble like we've been in foul trouble in the past. So, again, you know, we ask Brett to do a lot because, you know, he is our only size when it comes to, you know, that level. And, you know, and it's tough. I mean, Brett's coming off a year where he didn't play a lot last year because of injury, and we're still trying to get him in shape, and we're asking him a lot, you know, to do a lot. And I think he's been responding well, and we're just going to keep going at people with him and see what we can get accomplished. But, again, I mean, tonight's another big night for him to step up and prove that he belongs on the floor at this level.
Defensively, coaching the game against San Juan, I didn't feel that the guard play was necessarily a huge factor. I know that Cooper Black had a 3-point shot to end the game, but I thought the perimeter defense was actually very good. I thought the rotations were pretty slick. In fact, in the second half, I thought that really the perimeter defense was probably some of the best that we have seen throughout the entire region play. The big difference here was their guards found a way to get to the foul line. And I know you talked about that, some foul calls that didn't go Emory's way, but in the same sense, were you happy with what you saw perimeter defensively-wise in this game? Because I thought it was actually pretty good.
Oh, it was. And I watched the film a couple times that game. I thought this next film again today on it. And, you know, I was happy with that. I mean, I thought some of the calls that went against us were not agreeable calls, in my opinion, but it's part of the game, and we got to deal with it. And on the other end, you know, we need to have our guards attack the basket and get to the free throw line and match, you know, match that as well. But, you know, I was extremely happy that I thought our defense was better than it was, you know, the game before that. And, you know, and I think it's still getting better. You know, but we still got to get our body in front of somebody and move our feet a little better and not get to reach down and not put people on the foul line. We've got to be able to play good defense and not put people on the foul line. But, you know, I was happy with it, you know, again tonight defensively. You know, there's a lot of different defenses that I think we're going to look at just depending on how San Juan is shooting the ball, where they're attacking us from, and how we counteract that on the defensive side. You know, it's one of those things that you look at. I mean, there's a lot of things to look at from a coaching point of view. You just don't go out and play a man-to-man all night or a zone defense all night and just stay in it, you know, depending on what a team's doing to you. You got to be able to change. I think that's where we struggle a little bit in games is
being able to change from one to the other and back and forth a little bit, and that's what we need to get better at, because, you know, good teams can change what they're doing, but again, if we would just get, you know, really good at stopping the basketball in our man and not getting beat to the hole, you know, I think we can be a really good man-to-man defensive team. I mean, you look at the Richfield team, they don't change defenses a lot because they are so good at what they do, and we're working towards that. I mean, we, you know, again, it's you can be as frustrated as you want, and I apologize, we're not winning basketball games, but we're working towards a goal that we're going to accomplish, and it's a process. I mean, it's going to be a process. It's going to take a little time, and I believe these kids, you know, are going to reap the benefits from it and be extremely happy one day. And, you know, you got to take your lumps sometimes. I mean, you look at any good team, you know, they're not good every year all the time. They take their lumps and they work on it and they get better from it. And, you know, Emory's basketball has been a good program for a lot of years, and they've given a lot of lumps to a lot of teams. And unfortunately, we're taking some lumps right now, and we're going to be a better basketball team because of that. And, you know, it's going to make us work that much harder to understand just what it takes to be, you know, one of the elite programs again. So we're getting there. We're working towards it every day. And again, I appreciate you know, all the support that we get, everything like that. Just come be patient with us.
Coach, I definitely appreciate the time. I'm looking forward to the game tonight. We'll see you there. Thank you again.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach Jeff Cincineros of the Emory Spartan boys basketball team. Do not forget live coverage tonight, 6:30 p.m. Tip-off will follow at 7 as Emory takes on San Juan at home. We're going to break for just a moment. When we come back, we'll talk Major League Baseball. A big trade, finally official. Nolan Arenado's time in Colorado, it's finished. He's now a member of the St. Louis Cardinals, and it didn't cost the Cardinals much to get him. In fact, St. Louis gained $51 million to pull the trigger on this deal. Huh? Yeah, it's mind-boggling. We'll talk about that when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 a.m.
Over the weekend, we had a very big Major League Baseball trade go down. It's now official. Nolan Arenado, no longer a part of the Colorado Rockies. He's been shipped to the St. Louis Cardinals for some bubble gum, toothpicks, belly button lint. I mean, it was just a completely lopsided deal. And we knew the writing was on the wall. We knew that Arenado's time in Colorado was coming to a close. We just didn't know what Colorado would get in return. They got Austin Gomber. That is it. Literally. Plus, they had to throw out $50 million to St. Louis as well. Yes, a bizarre trade, to say the least. We're going to talk about that and more right now with our next guest, Steve Bortstein, kind enough to join us to talk Major League Baseball. Steve, I know you, like myself, look at this and say, huh? I mean, you and I had discussed the possibilities of Arenado going out of Colorado and what it would take to land him in division if it was the Los Angeles Dodgers that landed him, which was a hot rumor. Never in my wildest imagination would I have ever have thought that not only would Colorado send Arenado out for Austin Gomber, Mateo Gil, and a couple of kids, but they also sent him with $51 million.
And they also send him with this weird, awkward press conference yesterday. And I got a chance to watch highlights, if you will, of both press conferences, the Cardinals press conference introducing Arenado, and then the Rockies press conference with Dick Monfort and Jeff Breidich. And, oh my God, that's the most uncomfortable press conference I've watched in a long time. It's as uncomfortable a press conference. I will go back to when the Nationals traded or lost Bryce Harper. That's the one. It's that one, because this is just as uncomfortable. And my major concern with the Colorado Rockies is not the lack of accountability that Monfort places on Jeff Breidich. It's not even the lack of accountability on this particular move. Let's go back in time to some horrifying acquisitions that this team has made over the course of the last 4 years, okay?
Yeah, and Steve, Steve, before you dive into that, I think it's important to note that these are free agent signings that Colorado has made since Arenado made his first All-Star game back in 2015. Right. I think it's important to throw that out there. I think it sheds a little light on the situation.
And at that time, this is a team that had aspirations. Their playoffs were in the mist. It was like, hey, we just need a piece here. We need a piece there. Okay, well, then go get those pieces. Here's the acquisitions that have been made. Gerardo Parra signs a three-year deal for $27.5 million. He ended his tenure in Colorado with a minus war numbers and was terrible. Jason Mott came to the organization as a right-handed pitcher for 2 years, signed for $10 million. Then in 2016-17 offseason, they bring in Ian Desmond, who they signed to a five-year deal for $70 million. They bring in Mike Dunn for a three-year deal, right-handed pitcher, for $19 million. Now, if the Ian Desmond deal wasn't enough of a head-scratcher, he was god-awful. Colorado parted with Mike Dunn in 2019. He was terrible. In 2017-18, this was the kicker. They signed three pitchers. They signed Brian Shaw to a three-year deal, $27 million. Jake McGee to a three-year deal, $27 million. Wade Davis to a three-year, $52 million deal. Folks, that is $106 million spent on those three. And the best thing I can say about Jake McGee is that a couple of years after that, he came in and pitched a couple of innings for the Dodgers in which he looked somewhat salvageable. That was in 2020, by the way. Then in 2018-2019, they signed Daniel Murphy to a two-year, $24 million deal. These are terrible acquisitions. So why on earth would anyone think that this organization, based on their history of acquiring players, why would anyone think that this general manager, this organization, would be any good at trading away arguably the best player who's ever worn a Rockies uniform?
And you throw out all the dollar amounts, you throw out all the negative signings, right? Everyone that they have thrown money at and it didn't work. And Steve, I think the biggest thing missing from all that is in that mix, they let DJ LeMahieu walk.
Right.
So you're throwing...
All you can say is, you know, maybe we regret that. That was the one thing that Monfort said that made any sense at all yesterday at the press conference. He said, quote, in hindsight, I wish we could have figured out a way to keep DJ. We wish we could redo that. You could have. You could have by simply not having a moron in your general manager's office.
And I think for those who are not, and a lot of people are not familiar with Breidich, So let me give you a background, and this is my biggest problem with the Colorado Rockies. Breidich, he joined the Rockies back in 2004. Okay, at that time, he was hired to manage the team's minor league baseball operations. Then they promoted Breidich to the director of baseball operations. Then he served as a senior director of player development. And then, slowly but surely, the Dan O'Dowd situation just crumbled down to the ground, and that was just pitiful all the way around. Remember, Dan O'Dowd was going to introduce like a 16-man rotation, something ridiculous in that regard. So then what happens? Breidich works his way all the way up, and now he's the general manager. And it's just been one disaster after another. And Steve, I don't know that I can necessarily fault Breidich anymore, because he's obviously in a position where he cannot succeed. And it was the same situation with Dan O'Dowd. And if you continue to go down the line, the one correlating factor to all this is Monfort. I mean, and I think in baseball, look, we recognize all the shortcomings of Jerry Jones in the NFL. We recognize all the shortcomings of Dolan with the New York Knicks in the NBA. But when you look at this train wreck of a franchise in the Colorado Rockies, there's one correlating factor to it all, and that is Dick Monfort.
See, and I think that's, and you bring up a great point with Jerry Jones. You bring up a great point with that, because it's too easy to blame the guys who are hired on instead of blaming the guy who does the hiring, right? We pin the blame on the general manager of the organization. We pin the blame on the person who puts his face out there. It's not necessarily Breidich's fault. It's all Breidich's fault to some extent, because he's the guy out there in front of everyone. But it's Dick Monfort. This has always been Dick Monfort. It has always been his issue, because he's far more concerned with what kind of fancy bar he can build outside or near the stadium or inside the stadium, and far less concerned with the talent that he's putting on the field. And unfortunately, and this is where I get into a little bit of a weird discourse, I guess, with fans of the team, if you don't like the product that is being served to you at a restaurant over and over and over again, whose fault is it? The restaurant's fault for serving you bad food, or you for continuing to frequent a restaurant that serves bad food? At the end of the day, it's on the fan. It's on the people who go to the games. Now, 2020, obviously, no fans, so that's irrelevant. But in 2019 and 2018, when all these deals were going on that we just extrapolated here a moment ago, you were still buying tickets. You were still going to games. You were still going to this. This is an organization that's the 12th highest payroll in all of baseball, and the results were god-awful. I mean, 2 years ago, they won a playoff game. That's it. That's the extent of it. For the 12th highest payroll in baseball, you got one playoff win. That's it. So I get the anger towards Breidich, and I understand the anger towards Breidich, but you could have hired a trained monkey to get Wade Davis. You could have hired a trained monkey to sign Jake McGee. You could have hired nobody to do that. It's on Montfort, and it's on the fan who continues to support a product that clearly is disinterested in how bad that product actually is.
Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now. And Steve, obviously the big winners in this trade, it is the St. Louis Cardinals. And look, I understand that COVID has delivered an effect across the board. Everybody in this country, everyone in this world right now has been affected by COVID in some sense. Okay, and I think this is my biggest problem with this trade overall. Let's forget the fact that they traded Arenado for basically side pieces. Let's forget about that for a moment. Last season, we had a 60-game year, right? And the biggest contract on the books for the Colorado Rockies was Nolan Arenado. When he signed that deal with the Rockies, I remember you and I having the conversation. Colorado may have won the offseason. Machado signs for $300 million. Harper gets $300-plus million. Boy, they get Nolan Arenado, and they get him at $260, I believe, is what the deal was, okay? And that's important to mention here as well. So, all the way across the board, you're seeing the revenue drop tremendously. Okay, this is one of those instances when you look at the Rockies. This is, I don't want to say it's a homegrown team or a mom-and-pop store, but it's fairly close considering the other level of owners that we have in Major League Baseball. So when the turnstiles are not spinning, you're not making money, and there were no fans in the stands last year. So I understand at some point you have to cut somewhere, and it would make sense to get rid of the biggest salary. The problem I have, you sent $51 million out the door. If this is a cost-cutting move, you save $160 million long-term, but you send $51 million out the door with the one guy that'll put butts in the seats.
And then you compound it by making an allusion during this very same press conference that you don't even really know that Trevor Story is going to stay.
He's not going to stay.
The one guy who could actually put a few delusional butts in seats next season, and you don't even know, you can't even guarantee that he's going to be there. I mean, come on. I mean, you've got to be kidding me with that. Their record since Jeff Breidich took over the organization is 418 wins and 453 losses. That's their record since he took over as general manager of this team. That's slightly better, thinking that how bizarre this is. That's slightly better than the Dan O'Dowd record of 464 winning percentage in those years that he was general manager, and Jeff Breidich a 480 winning percentage. And that's only because Dan O'Dowd was there forever. That's the only reason he's got a slightly lower winning percentage, is because he was there for 15 years. But it's unfathomable to me that we're gonna blame Breidich, you know, unabashedly, and we should, because he's the general manager. But the blame really belongs to the organizational structure at the very top that has allowed this to go on with seemingly no interest whatsoever in at least examining what it is you're doing and why you're so, and why this man, and why this organization is so inefficient at selecting, forget free agents, just selecting front office guys.
Yeah, and look, I feel truly bad for Colorado Rocky fans, and I know quite a few of them, unfortunately for them.
I don't feel bad for them at all.
I do, because what do you have to get excited about? I mean, honestly, what do you have to get excited about? You can look at franchises that are the low of the lows, right? If you are a Miami Marlins fan, you have some sort of hope with your ownership group, and the fact that Don Mattingly was manager of the year, Jesus Aguilar performed well above his expectations. I mean, you can grab something from the lowest of the low. If you're a Colorado Rocky fan right now, you are in a division with the Los Angeles Dodgers, who are looking to go to four World Series in 5 years, the San Diego Padres, who are a legitimate threat to the Dodgers not getting to their fourth World Series in 5 years, the Arizona Diamondbacks, who have mingled in success for the better part of their existence. Same concept with the San Francisco Giants. We're talking about a team that won three World Series championships during the Madden Bumgarner era. And now you're starting to see some of the young talent come to fruition in San Francisco. They were in the playoff chase last year. Steve, there's nothing positive to say about Colorado. The only thing we can say is Trevor Story may not be there.
Right. That's the only thing you have going for you is, hey, come out and buy season tickets and you can hang out and maybe you can hang out depending on crowd sizes and things of that nature. Maybe you can come hang out and watch a team that is going to be, twice a week or whatever, however long he's going to be there, however long he's going to be on the starting rotation. You can come out and watch a guy who's going to pitch for us who wasn't even guaranteed a starting spot in the Cardinals rotation in 21. That's what we got for this. And we're $51 million shy of having any sort of revenue whatsoever. I don't feel sorry for them. I don't feel sorry for them because they're still going to go out and buy tickets because that's how gullible fans are. There's a level of gullibility, right, that fans have. There's a level of delusion that fans have when you're starting a season, whether it's basketball, baseball, football, whatever. I think it's even more so with baseball. Oh, it's a brand new year. Go get them next year. How do you even contemplate that thought in this for this organization? But if you're going to go out and buy tickets and you know you're getting a subpar product, that's on you at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, Rocky fans and the organization are still holding on to Rocktober, which took place, that was well over a decade ago, right, where they got hot. They didn't even win the division crown that year. They've never won a division crown in their entire existence. And so, yes, it's got to be hard. I'll tell you, it's a beautiful place to go to a game. And I do believe that the majority of people, and I shouldn't say this because I don't go to a ton of Rocky games. I manage to go to a few a year. You are just a diehard baseball fan in general, right? I mean, ultimately, that has to be the selling point. You can go to a beautiful stadium. It's reasonably priced. You can take a family of five or six. Really, when you look at the National League venues, you're hard-pressed to find a better one than Coors Field. It's that great. It's affordable. And you just want to watch baseball. I guess that's the selling point. I don't know.
It's a slightly better selling point than the old LA Clippers had when the old LA Clippers, I'm not describing the current LA Clippers, but when there were two venues to watch a pro basketball game in Los Angeles, there was the Fabulous Forum, which at that time, 80s, 90s, you couldn't get a seat in because, quite honestly, everyone wanted to see the Lakers because they were the best team in basketball. And then there was the Clippers, who played in downtown Los Angeles at an old antiquated LA sports arena. They were a crappy basketball team that had very little talent on it. But hey, the best part about it is you get to watch the Bulls play. You get to watch the Lakers play there. You can watch other teams play there because their teams are much better than the team that's currently hosted by the facility. That's the LA Clippers. That's what you're compared to now. You're compared to a team that in the early 90s, going back to the late 80s, the mid 80s, was a subpar basketball team in an area that 20 miles away had the best basketball team in the league by far. And you could go to their games because it was cheaper and you could get a seat there because no one wanted to see the Clippers play anybody.
Yeah, that's a fair comparison. I mean, it really is. And that's where we're at right now with Colorado Rocky baseball. Anyway, the St. Louis Cardinals have got to be happy.
St. Louis Cardinals have got to be thrilled. Are you kidding me? It's like a kidnap ransom for this guy. They got $50 million to get a guy out of a team that he desperately wanted out of. And now you've got one of the better top half lineups in all the National League right now.
Yeah, I know that the Cardinals were hot on Francisco Lindor, and we're comparing apples to oranges here, right? It's not necessarily the same thing. But Steve, I got to be honest with you. If you could tell me I could get Francisco Lindor, and you look at the trade package that it took to acquire him compared to what happened here in the Arenado deal, I'd take the Arenado deal 10 out of 10 times. I don't even have to think twice about it.
No, absolutely. You didn't have to give up anything. I mean, legitimately. I mean, it'd be one thing if you were saying or admitting that you're rebuilding, right? Hey, you're like the Giants. You're rebuilding your organization. But rebuilding your organization implies that you're getting prospects that are at least somewhat recognizable prospects. It would be one thing if you were saying, hey, we're going to go out and get these young, talented players who are going to add a lot to the organization in 2022, in 2023, in 2024. You didn't even do that. The guys you got, aside from the pitcher, the guys you got are low-rated prospects that weren't even really sought after by any major league organization to be that guy who's going to take over the league in 3 or 4 years. It's not like you did that. No, you went out and got low-end prospects. You got a pitcher who was platooning himself between the starting rotation and the bullpen because the Cardinals didn't know what to do with the guy. And now he's one of the anchors now, I guess, in that awesome Colorado Rockies rotation. You don't even have a legitimate 1-2-3 starting rotation that you can at least stand behind of this team going into 2021. It's a mess.
Again, Steve Bortstein, our guest right now. Steve, I know we have so many other baseball topics that we are going to have to dive into, including when the season is going to start. Right now, the players are saying, hey, we're going to start normal time 2021. It's going to be a normal season. I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. Unfortunately, we have ran out of time on this segment, but it is always a pleasure to get you on. And, of course, we have to let the listeners know where they can find more of you.
You can follow me on Twitter at Radio Durango SB. You can follow me there. I do a lot of horse racing coverage for horseracingnation.com. So always excited about that and looking forward to the start of the baseball season. Looking forward to the Super Bowl this weekend.
Who are you picking in the Super Bowl?
Logically, I mean, Kansas City, but I'm rooting for Tom Brady. But the injury to Eric Fisher, that's a huge, huge loss, I think, for the Kansas City Chiefs. It would not shock me at all if Tampa Bay won. I'm going to pick Kansas City in a close one. I still think they have just a few more weapons. But I'm going to pick Kansas City, and I think what's going to be a thriller.
All right. Looking forward to it, Steve. I know we'll catch up again real soon. Thank you again for the time today.
Anytime, my friend. Thank you.
We're going to break one last time. We do have more Drive Time Sports on the way when we return right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
Yeah, running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
We're back to close out this edition of Drive Time Sports. It's a fun show, a couple of fun topics. Love talking about the Colorado Rockies and a dysfunctional franchise. An opportunity to kind of dig down into the numbers. Just a bad way right now. That's it. I mean, that's a franchise that's not going anywhere anytime soon. On the show tomorrow, we're going to continue to preview Super Bowl 55, which, of course, is coming up this Sunday. It's just a little odd. I mean, COVID has taken a little bit away from the Super Bowl. I think the buildup, the two-week buildup. Now, the NFL does things so much different than any of the other major sports. It becomes an event. Like, the Super Bowl itself is an event that, I guess, lighthearted fans can kind of glom onto, right? Less than casual. People that don't watch a football game all year are going to watch the Super Bowl. And so the two-week buildup adds to that. But when there's no media blitz and there's limitations on what can be done because of COVID, I think that two-week gap kind of hurts it a little bit. You know, the NBA Finals, it is what it is. It's 7 games. And that's the reason why you're not selling spots, 30-second spots, for $6, $7 million during the NBA Finals. But that's why you can do it with the Super Bowl. It's just a little bit of a different vibe this year, I think, all in all. But we'll start breaking it down, talking Super Bowl 55 on the show tomorrow. We'll also catch up with Emory Lady Spartan basketball coach Lynn Tuttle. We'll gear up for tomorrow night's game between Carbon and Emory. That's a big one. Right now, Carbon number 2, Emory number 3. So that'll be on the show tomorrow. We will see you then. Be safe. I am out.